Chapter 17. Silver's Embassy. Sure enough, there were two men just outside the stockade, one of them waving a white cloth, the other, no less than Silver himself, standing placidly by. It was still quite early and the coldest morning that I think I ever was abroad in, a chill that pierced into the marrow. The sky was bright and cloudless overhead, and the tops of the trees shone rosily in the sun. But where Silver stood with his lieutenant, all was still in shadow, and they waded knee-deep in a low white vapor that had crawled during the night onto shore. "Keep indoors, men," said the captain. 10-1, this is a trick." Then he hailed the buccaneer. "Who goes? Stand or we fire." "Flag of truce," cried Silver. The captain was on the porch, keeping himself carefully out of the way of a treacherous shot, should any be intended. He turned and spoke to us. "Doctor's watch on the lookout. Dr. Livesey, take the north side, if you please. Jim, the east. Gray, west. The watch below, all hands to load muskets. Lively, men, and careful." And then he turned again to the mutineers. "And what do you want with your flag of truce?" he cried. This time it was the other man who replied. "Captain Silver, sir, to come on board and make terms," he shouted. "Captain Silver? Don't know him. Who's he?" cries the captain. And we could hear him adding to himself, "Captain, is it?" Long John answered for himself. "Me, sir. These poor lads have chosen me captain, after your desertion, sir," laying a particular emphasis upon the word desertion. "We're willing to submit, if we can come to terms. All I ask is your word, Captain Smollett, to let me safe and sound out of this here stockade, and 1 minute to get out of sight before a gun is fired." "My man," says Captain Smollett, "I have not the slightest desire to talk to you. If you wish to talk to me, you can come, that's all. If there's any treachery, it'll be on your side." "That's enough, Captain," shouted Long John cheerily. "A word from you's enough. I know a gentleman, and you may lay to that." We could see the man who carried the flag of truce attempting to hold Silver back. But Silver laughed at him aloud and slapped him on the back, as if the idea of alarm had been absurd. Then he advanced to the stockade, threw over his crutch, got a leg up, and with great vigor and skill succeeded in surmounting the fence and dropping safely to the other side. I will confess that I was far too much taken up with what was going on to be of the slightest use as sentry. Indeed, I had already deserted my eastern loophole and crept up behind the captain, who had now seated himself on the threshold with his elbows on his knees, his head in his hands, and his eyes fixed on the water as it bubbled out of the old iron kettle in the sand. He was whistling to himself. Silver had terrible hard work getting up the knoll. What with the steepness of the incline, the thick tree stumps, and the soft sand, he and his crutch were as helpless as a ship in stays. But he stuck to it like a man in silence, and at last arrived before the captain, whom he saluted in the handsomest style. He was tricked out in his best. An immense blue coat, thick with brass buttons, hung as low as to his knees, and a fine laced hat was set on the back of his head. "Here you are, my man," said the captain, raising his head. "You had better sit down." "You ain't going to let me inside, captain," complained Long John. "It's a cold morning, to be sure, sir, to sit outside upon the sand." "Why, Silver," said the captain, "if you had pleased to be an honest man, you might have been sitting in your galley. It's your own doing. You're either my ship's cook, and then you were treated handsome, or Captain Silver, a common mutineer and pirate, and then you can go hang." "Well, well, captain," returned the sea cook, sitting down as he was bidden on the sand, "you'll have to give me a hand up again, that's all.